Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Rose Podcast. This week, we go on a transformational journey of how to heal emotionally. Like, what does that mean? This week's guest had a video that went viral that was a rage ritual. And people were like, what the hell is this? A bunch of women at a retreat getting all mad about a ton of things and just letting out. Is this privilege? And I've been part of anger expressions, whether that's in boxing or in men's groups. And I could tell you that there's so much powerful healing that occurs when we release the energy, the emotional energy. And rage and anger are actually incredibly important emotions. We associate anger with aggression, which is destructive. But clean anger is actually important to protect boundaries, values, yourself. And rage is the extreme version of that that's required in order to honor yourself, in order to stand for yourself in moments where you don't feel safe. And the body's, it's a natural response when you self-abandon, when you're not feeling safe within your own experience. And so in this week's episode, the guest Mia Magic, we dive into how do we heal emotionally? What does that look like? What is the power of a rage ritual? What is that? And societal conditionings around emotions, and how do we heal emotionally? How do we learn how to become more fluent and emotionally intelligent, aware, and be able to put words to feelings, right? Which is really a practice. Before we dive into this week's episode, wherever you listen to your podcast, make sure you hit that subscribe button so you do not miss any more episodes. Also, that really helps support the show. So with all that said, let's dive in. Here's Mia Magic. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Rose Podcast. Today I have Mia Magic. Welcome.
Thank you.
Magic, I'm guessing, is not your birth name.
It's not my birth name.
Wouldn't that be sweet, though?
It would be.
What does magic mean to you, then? Like, why magic?
Well, someone gave me that name, and then everyone just started referring to me as that and forgot that I had a real last name. But
like
to me,
Smith.
Yeah. But to me, magic is our capacity as emanations of the divine to wield the forces of creation in the direction of our desires. We look at our bodies. Our body is the earth. Our bones are like the stones in the mountains. The blood within us is like the rivers and creeks and streams. It's water. It's our sweat and our tears. Then we breathe in the air that the trees and plants give to us, and that's how we communicate. And then there's fire and electricity running and moving in our bodies in every moment. So we are nature. We are the elements, and we can work with those frequencies to make our dreams come true. And so that's how I wield and work with magic.
You talk about witching, into witching, uh-huh. Which I was like, oh, that's good.
Yeah.
So what does it mean to be a witch today?
So the word witch comes from wise or wisdom, one who sees, one who knows. So to me, everybody, like the love that you're teaching people about, that's wisdom. Every single thing that we have gleaned from our life experience, knowledge is conceptual, wisdom is embodied. Mm-hmm. So how have we taken what life has presented to us? How have we utilized our curriculum and turned it into wisdom instead of just information? So everyone has wisdom. Everyone is a witch. And for me, I work deeply with nature. That's where I get most of my wisdom and information, is what I've learned from the natural world. And then I really, to me, the wisdom of my life experience is that healing, and instead of trying to cast a spell or like manifest this thing, my question is, well, what's in the way of it? And what belief systems do I have or am I perpetuating that are actually the opposite of that desire, mm-hmm. or are actually preventing me from actualizing the thing that I want? And so I work deeply with the healing. That is my magic, is healing magic. And so that's what makes me a witch, is helping people transform the shadows and the patterns and the pain into power, and really being able to work with what you've got and what has happened to you as actually an empowering path towards who you're meant to be.
Do you work mainly with women?
I work with everyone. I have a lot of one-on-one clients that are men as well. My retreats, primarily, we do like full Hogwarts experiences at castles in Europe that are so dope. And my retreats at this point have been just for women. I've opened them for men and none signed up. So, but I work with everyone. My, in my programs and in teaching people about utilizing magic, it's about 60-40 women to men. So there's a lot of men that come through my ecosystem.
Yeah, I definitely find like when people are consuming more relational healing knowledge, Like my Instagram following was always around 85% female.
Yeah.
Even my friends who do men's only, like that's what they teach.
Yeah.
Is they're still about 60%.
Yeah.
So I'm like, wow, it's so wild. Like women want to learn about how men work, of course, but that's so evolutionary because it's like the Harriet Lerner talks about how the subordinate group always needs to learn the needs and nuances of the dominant group for survival. And I was like, yeah, because you always get, you know, people always get asked like, oh, why do women seek more emotional learning? Yeah. Like, why are there not more men here?
Yeah.
And it's because we haven't had to.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there's so much more being asked of men relationally and from a parental perspective too, which is, of course, important, that we have to develop emotional fluency.
Yeah.
The thing that I find is also confronting there in a good way is that the very thing that your relationship is asking of you as a man is the very thing you've been taught not to have.
Yeah.
So it's like you have to go into the place that you've been told doesn't exist. And if you go there, you'll lose your masculinity.
Yeah.
And there's certainly evidence of that. Like, you know, men essentially aspire to be like the men that women choose. And so if women are choosing similar types of men who are emotionally disconnected and power, you know, exploiting power, then men will see that. I think that's the draw of someone like Andrew Tate, which is that masculinity has been called toxic. So if boys are learning that men are bad and they're bad, innately they have bad spirits, they're bad humans, they're rapists, they're murderers, then some guy coming along and being like, fuck all that. I got chicks and cars and the guy's going like, yeah, he's not apologizing.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, how do we bring more gentleness to that? And like in the work that you do with healing, how do we even, and I'd be curious your experience of like, what is the more female side of that? And how do we move towards it either, no matter where we start?
I think one of the important pieces is like knowing how we got here, because women used to always work collaboratively. We're sitting side by side, tending the babies and the gardens and making the baskets and tanning the hides of the animals to weave the clothing. And when the witch trials were occurring, oftentimes if you were being tortured, the only way to save yourself was by naming someone else. So name another witch, give us another victim, give us another person to persecute. And so it didn't matter if it was your friend or your cousin or the girl down the street or the baker's daughter. If you named someone else, you could often save yourself, or they would lie and tell you that you would save yourself and you actually both end up dead or tortured.
Yeah.
And so it became completely unsafe to have female friends. If you were caught out foraging for plants in the woods, which plants were our only medicine at that time, so we were doing a lot of foraging, you know, and if you were caught doing that or singing or just like splashing around and having fun in a river, any of that could be grounds for accusation of witchcraft. And so any type of completely natural, innate, instinctual, feminine connection and any behavior linked to that was grounds for death and really threatened our survival. And so we stopped working together. We stopped spending time together. You know, a woman, if she wanted your husband, if she wanted your land, if she wanted your livestock, she could just accuse you of witchcraft. And we started not trusting each other. And then I think also we stopped trusting ourselves, because if we got tortured, then we named someone else. And then it was like, oh, I just betrayed her in return. So this is hundreds and hundreds of years of us turning against the way that we always functioned for hundreds of thousands of years prior to those dark ages. And so I think now we see women competing for male attention and, you know, needing designer bags to project outward to others, like who and what they are, and create this status symbol and gossiping behind each other's backs. And I think that there's so much to be said for becoming trustable within ourselves. Like, how do I need to treat myself and my inner child in order to trust myself? And then how can I move forward with other women and become more trustable? And the healing work, I mean, that's a huge part that happens in my retreats, is just being able to sit and be with another woman and fall apart and show your challenging moments and your demons and your darkness and still be loved and still be held. And we just, there haven't been spaces like that in society for any of us. Doesn't matter who you are. And so I think that we're seeing the transformation and the transition where women are banding together again and working collaboratively and synergistically. And we are going to have to lead forward and show again, like if it starts with yourself, right? If you can't trust yourself, if your friends can't trust you, and then you're going to try and bring something to your man, it's not going to feel trustable. It's not going to feel like, oh, she's on my team. And I think that's what I see in relationship often. And that I experienced in my own as well is, you know, it's you and me on a team versus the issue, not you versus me. And we get really caught in that. And I find that like men will experience a woman bringing feedback or bringing an invitation to them as an attack and an affront, when really it's like, no, because we're on a team together, I want to solve this challenge. And I think that's how we all have to face all of these issues. It's like, we're on the same team. Men and women are on the same team. Women and women are on the same team. Men and men are on the same team. Non-binary individuals, we're all on the same human team working like an uphill battle against many, many years of programming. And so it's like the most imperative work to be doing. And I think that that's what I'm focusing on within myself. How can I heal the wounds of my inner masculine and the wounds of my inner feminine and the wounds of my ability to trust myself and others in order to let that ripple out into how I experience reality? And that's all any of us can do.
What do you think then when someone is like, the reason that our relationship is this way is because he won't or she won't go to therapy or read the book or I think we often look back at our relationships, and I would have done this before, but I don't do it now, is like I would have looked back at my relationship at like when I was 19 and got cheated on and be like, oh, she's the reason our relationship ended.
Yeah.
The betrayal was the subject, but really I can look back and see how many self-betrayals occurred along the way. But man, now I always say like 100% of the time, I used to say 99.9, but I'm like, nah, this fucker, it's 100. If you're willing to look at it, 100% of external betrayals are preceded by some form of internal betrayal.
100%.
And that, like, just being able to be like, where was it? Where did I have the feeling? And if I can't get to that, then I can't be with the truth, and then I can't reconnect to my guidance.
And then I'm living out of alignment, full stop, and it's going to keep happening. Everything is going to be dissonant as a result of that.
Yeah, and then I'm like a victim of the story, which, again, not negating true victimization, right, but saying that when you can actually look for the place that you chose to ignore your intuition, then now you're in choice. So if you like choose to be in relationship circumstances, no matter what they are, that are not good or just disconnected or not aligned, then you recognize that you chose to be in it. That means you can choose not to be in it. And until you access that true level of responsibility moving forward, you still won't have access to full choice, because that like shadow part that got captured, you know, 1 week in that you ignored, and then now you're 10 years in.
Yeah.
You got to get to the earliest.
Yeah.
You know?
You're on that timeline. And that's why I wrote intuition. And that's, to me, the difference between intuition and intuition is that wisdom. It's not just about getting the hit or seeing the synchronicity. It's about, what do you do with it?
Yeah.
What choice do you make when you see the red flag or the green flag? And how do you then navigate your reality by following what is aligned? Because you've learned that when you don't do that, shit hits the fan, and you know, you go down a path that's messy or challenging. And there is this way of following the guidance and the signs of the universe to your highest timeline. And I think that that's really, that I agree wholeheartedly with what you just said. And that's absolutely what I have experienced, is it's all me. Like, anytime we're doing this, it's like,
I hate that reality. Yeah,
this is
it's reality.
Me. Like, this is my shit. And I definitely did that. I self-abandoned. I sacrificed. I made things okay that weren't okay. In conflict, when I wanted a particular resolution, if I didn't get it, I would shut down and like, okay, make myself wrong because I'm being responded to with defensiveness. And that's not my truth. And that's not anybody else's responsibility. It's mine.
Right.
And I think that will, when we can all reclaim that. I worked with a client once who'd been a really serious victim of domestic abuse. And she was out of the hospital and having just a hard time. And she was like, but he did this to me. But he like put me in the hospital. It was horrible. And I just looked at her and I was like, but was there a moment before this happened where you ignored a red flag, where right. you felt him be something other than what was safe for you and you stayed? And again, that's not to make it her fault, but it's to reclaim the responsibility.
Of choice, right? Of
exactly.
choice.
And she did. She was like, her face just dropped. She was like, oh my God. And now there are many other circumstances where women receive abuse that they did not like call in, but all of it's an opportunity to then choose how we respond to it as well. And it's a wild world out there. But yeah. I think that we're doing our best and things are changing. I really believe that they are.
You know how much I love understanding the deeper layers of life, relationships, emotions, and yeah, especially our health. And one of the biggest game changers for me has been learning how my body actually responds to everything I do in terms of what I eat, how I sleep, and how I handle stress. And NutriSense has really made this so possible for me. This is a brand that I sought out to work with because I love what they did and what they stood for. And to give you some context, right now, only about 12% of Americans are metabolically healthy, and a third are pre-diabetic, most without even knowing it. And the way we've been taught to think about health is outdated. It's not about quick fixes or guessing games. It's about real-time insights and personalized guidance that can create long-term sustainable change. For me, I got a blood glucose, an A1C measurement that came back where I was high normal. And I was like, nope, type 2 diabetes is in my family, never happening to me. So this is why I started working with NutriSense, where they combine continuous glucose monitoring with expert one-on-one nutritionist support. So you're not just tracking numbers, you're understanding what they mean and how to optimize your health. So it's not about restriction or following rigid rules, it's about discovering what actually works for your body. So maybe that smoothie you thought was healthy is actually spiking your blood sugar. Or maybe pairing carbs with protein could change everything for your energy levels. These are the kinds of real eye-opening insights NutriSense provides. One of the most surprising things I learned was I was so hypersensitive to sweet potatoes. They made my blood glucose skyrocket. But then I learned that if I changed the order of how I ate my food, my proteins and my veggies, and then that, it mitigated that. So what I love most about this is that you're not left to figure it out alone. Your personal nutritionist helps interpret the data and suggest simple, actionable tweaks that can actually make a difference. So if you're ready to take control of your health in a way that's personalized, backed by science, and actually sustainable, check out NutriSense. Head over to www.nutrisense.io/marketing/markgroves and use the code MARKGROVES to get $125 off. Your body is already communicating with you. NutriSense just helps you understand what it's saying. Yeah, you know, what you're saying about that circumstance, the complexity we're being asked to be able to hold is that you can experience that, which is obviously wrong. And also, you can have a template and a framework and a pattern within your own choices that makes you susceptible to coding red flag behavior as green flags or orange. And so it's like you got to get to where you actually, your body said red and you didn't change. So then you look at, okay, well, where did that come from? Where did I learn that chaos and a lack of safety
yeah.
was so normalized? And like, where am I not resourced to be able to leave? Like, you know, to have friends, to have community who hold this standard, yeah. you know? And it's, I look at the impact that social media has on especially women and girls, which is that Jonathan Haidt talks about this in his book, Coddling of the American Mind, and also The Anxious Generation, where he talks about how, like, if you gave all boys and girls a gun, more boys would kill themselves than girls. Girls try to kill themselves more than boys, but boys are more successful because they choose more like ways that have more finality.
Whoa.
Like jumping off things, shooting themselves, you know, things like that. The point he makes is that the way that women and girls handle conflict is through social things like gossip and things like that, right? Mm. Which you were alluding to before, like through the witch trials and how that. And so he said, if you want to hand the perfect weapon to young girls, it's social media.
Mm.
And so the impact that has, and I'd say like when I look at, we sort of like unleashed an experiment on kids without their consent with this product. And I think it will be seen as the smoking of our time.
For sure.
But with that said, it's not to say there aren't incredible benefits of it, of course.
Yeah.
Unlike smoking. Although, hey, maybe some people get a good kick out of
that. That's what you're into.
Smoke after sex or whatever people are into. But what's interesting to me is like we can see all this happening. Like in real time, it's so obviously happening, especially to young people, but especially to young girls. And I think of like how does a woman or a teen girl, but how does a woman begin to recapture her attention? How does she separate herself from, I look at all the constant fucking messaging about what your ass has to look like. Like you got fake ass, fake lips, fake tits, fake. And I'm just like, I'm not judging. None of this is a judgment. I could care less what people choose. My whole thing is like, there are whole marketing campaigns that are all about exploiting the lack of quote unquote perceived value of the materialistic, not the materialism of a woman, but the like
physicality.
Exactly. Yeah. And so it's like she becomes a sex object as soon as she goes through puberty.
Yeah.
And obviously for some crazy fuck people before that, but like that's where they become sexualized and become like a potential target, right? And so then I think of like all the stuff that goes into gender, which is like, well, what's the fastest way to not be a target?
Right.
Become a boy. But that's, and that's a whole complex, important subject, which people are dancing around and don't want to talk about. But my whole thing is more interest in like, how do women, because like as a male, I've participated in that creation of that thing as both an archetype, but also, like for sure, materialism for sure when I was younger. So like, how do we even, I know that's a big question, but I'm curious your thoughts.
Something that you said when we were talking about rejecting the red flags, you mentioned the body. And if we can get back into our bodies, again, that very first introductory question about magic, your body is an emanation of divine creation. If you want to, if you don't want to believe like, oh, I am God, you are God, that's fine. But you are a reflection of nature. And so getting out into nature, off the phone, into your body, working with, like that was one of the things, it's so funny you say that, because that my body had these crazy reactions. Insane, wild things were happening to like my body.
If you're okay sharing.
Well, I was getting really bad UTIs.
Yeah.
So that was one thing. Obviously, like my pussy was being like, no. And I totally disregarded it. I got this crazy rash, this like histamine responses where like, my skin, it would be a lot of, not like face skin, but like big rashes, like these wild welts would just be showing up all over my body. And our skin, this is another part of intuition, is the understanding how the language of the universe is communicating with us, and every part of our body has significance, right? The way that our arms sprout out from our hearts in utero, we hug, we create with our hands. Our skin is the boundary between us and others. It is the thing that like separates who we are and holds our spirit inside. And then the rest of the world is on the other side of that. So my skin was just freaking out over and over all the time. And I just ignored it. And so I think that's one of the first steps to counteracting the blatant programming that is, you're not enough as you are. You need to have the ass, you need to have the tits, you need to have the right clothes, you need to have this, you need to have that in order to be loved, in order to be valued. When you can come home to your body, and one of the things that's so simple that I recommend and I work with people all the time is just eye gazing, just looking into your own left eye. You know, the longer you go, the trippier it gets. You're going to see your own face. I turned into this like epic black male warrior the other day at like the 15 minute mark, doing it with myself and just like seeing myself as this totally different version of who I am. And when you can look yourself in the eye and find the divine or the secrets of the universe or just peace and just love and just acceptance, then it's a lot harder to be manipulated by the outside world. And so it's about coming home to the body. It's about coming home to our true nature, watching when you make choices, whether it's to go and get injections or how to spend your day, what kind of food you're eating. Every time you're making a choice, that power of choice, are you feeding, you know, it's like the proverb of the two wolves. Which wolf are you feeding? Are you feeding the wolf that is leading you in the direction of the life you actually want to be living? Or are you feeding the wolf that is part of the disempowerment of all women and of all people in general, that is the advertising and the social media? And just, I mean, I'm a capitalist. I'm here to enjoy my life. I wouldn't be able to have flown myself to Austin and like rented a nice car, and you wouldn't have this studio. And we need money in the modern day, unfortunately. Yeah. That's how it works. So I'm a capitalist, but I'm here to be a regenerative capitalist. And I believe that that's possible. Mm. And if all of us would move towards regenerative capitalism, we wouldn't be seeking to disempower and dysregulate and damage other people in order to make money. Like what we're doing is, I'm literally serving people. I love what I do because, okay, if I'm an exchange value with them, I'm going to give them something good.
Yeah.
Their lives are going to be positively benefited and impacted. And so if we shifted that, then everything would shift. But as consumers and as customers, we also have to be voting with our dollars, and we have to look at every single day what we're doing, because beyond or prior to voting with our dollars, it's voting with our time.
Yeah.
The time is the most valuable resource we have, and we're trading it for money. We're trading it for being sold something on the phone. But when we can say, okay, I'm going to spend the first 10, 15 minutes of my day connecting with myself. I'm going to drop in with my body. I'm going to just hold her or him, and I'm going to connect with what this sacred vessel of the divine has for me today. Do you need anything? Do you want anything? Is there something I'm ignoring? Is there something that I'm not paying attention to? And reconnecting with our body is, you know, the way that our house is the home of the body. Our body is the home of our spirit. And I think that is first and foremost, because we are so disconnected. We're so disassociated. We're like so in the mind and caught up. And I think when we can come home and create the love within, and plant the seeds of love inside of ourselves and tend to that garden and nourish it, it's going to need, you know, the air, which is the kind words, and watching when the thoughts go down into the spiral and they're negative or they're harsh or they're unkind. It's like, okay, wait a second. Whoop, like reel that back in. Can I shift that thought to something different? Can I even just sing a song or a mantra that's going to help me get out of that pattern? They're going to need water. They need hydration. That's positive emotions. What do I go and do that makes me feel better? Or can I just like get a sweat on? Can I get some movement on? And do I need to just cry my tears? Do I need to do the rage ritual? What kind of water is going to saturate and nourish these seeds that I'm planting within myself? What kind of food? What kind of activities? What kind of actions on a daily basis? That's the fire. It's like, how am I transforming? If every day I wake up and I just sit on my phone for 30 minutes, then I'm choosing the same action that's harming me. So can I get up and either do the eye gazing or just like put some music on and dance or go outside and look at the plants and the trees? Can I take a different action? And then what am I doing with my body? How am I tending to it and treating it? How are my relationships? If I'm spending time with toxic people who just keep making me feel like shit, or who don't believe in my dreams, who aren't going to cheerlead me and encourage me, then again, I'm making that choice. And that's my earthly material. You know, where you're saying the difference between like physical, material, matter comes from mother. It's about like being connected to the mother. That is our material reality. And it's so skewed. Now it's become about like possessions and stuff. Like, no, it's about knowing that we are all humans and animals, brothers and sisters, because we come from the same mother we all share. And when we can return to that. Like, that's how, as a woman in my 30s, like, I've never gotten injections. I've never had plastic surgery. I've never gotten any of these things. It doesn't mean I don't think about it. Doesn't mean I don't look at people doing it and be like, damn, do I need that? Do I need that in order to be acceptable, in order to be loved? And again, also no judgment, but I want to choose to self-source love. I want to be the origin of my own love and not need anything outside of myself. And I find that reconnecting to our true nature, watching the ways that our daddy issues or our mommy issues or our trauma or our childhood wounding informs how we choose or vote with our dollars and our time and our actions every single moment, the more I connect with my true nature and the more I listen to my body and give her the time to express and communicate and then actually follow her invitations, actually listen, again, the difference between knowledge and wisdom, the more my life changes and the more beautiful it gets, and the more even hardship and breakups and uncoupling and like loss and grief, it just becomes part of the curriculum that's making me better and that's helping me become the kind of woman I always dreamed of being. And I believe that that's possible, but it's a harder choice. It's a lot easier to just numb and watch Instagram than face off with your shit.
If you're listening to this podcast and you're thinking, I want to build those skills, I want to learn how to create epic love, I want to heal from a breakup, I want to heal my nervous system as I'm in the dating process so I can choose the most aligned partner to create a future with, well, I have the perfect opportunity for you. Because you're listening to the Create the Love podcast, you get to bypass the waiting list for the Create the Love community. You can go to createthelove.com/yes and get started with whichever course is most applicable to your life and the skill set you want to develop. And here's one thing I know for certain, is that great love can't wait. You have to get started right away. Your healing can't wait. So go register now at createthelove.com/yes and get started right away.
I've thought a lot about that, that idea of ignorance is bliss. I was like, ignorance was fucking bliss. Like, it was nice to know I could just do a shot of tequila and hook up and, like, you know, experience the variety of a different areola, you know, like the that there was just like, even though my shadow was making those choices, like, it was a lot of pain that was driving because I could control the depth of intimacy. There was a lack of true vulnerability. I remember Ram Dass saying that, you know, like, here's everyone bowling and bowling's not bowling to you anymore. And there's the truth. There is a truth to, like, we want to go back to what we knew. We want to go back to the world before we awakened. We want to go back to, but you can't. And I think, you know, in the concept of, like, moving through initiations, that's like staying suspended in an initiation. Like, we haven't accepted the world as it is now. And so and who we are in that world, because who we are now through the awarenesses we have of our childhood stuff, the patterns we choose, the things we find ourselves in, the like conceptual, logistical things that we have in our lives, that it doesn't make sense. It can't go back. Like, it doesn't fit. Like, you can't leave a toxic relationship. You can get back in one, but you'll never be able to do it without pain anymore.
Yeah.
Because the dissonance of the knowing, as you said, the knowledge is conceptual, but wisdom is integrated. Yeah. So, you know, and that's like integral, right? Like wholeness, that there's this connection to, I've thought a lot about this, that everybody's fucking Yoda, but they don't know that they are. Like, they don't realize, like, when I finally was like, holy shit, I know a lot of stuff that I'm not living. And it's actually that pain where I think I'm like, oh, I made a mistake again. And it was like, no, I knew this wasn't a good choice. So it's not a mistake anymore. It's a choice. Yeah. And it's actually the pain of knowing something and continuing to do it is fucking awful.
Yeah.
It's like, so it's stomach, it's gut, it's heart, it's throat. It's like our bodies, as you said, are like throwing up fucking red flags, like literal red rashes, or like hives, or autoimmune, or, you know, all the different things, right? Like hair falling out. You know, like, I have a friend whose beard started to get patchy because he was so stressed and he was not listening. And, you know, in a in in a culture or cultures, which I think there's this interesting thing where the soul's evolution seems to be in opposition for the most part, not always, but with like evolutionary programming. So like our evolutionary programming is to be homogeneous in the way that we see things, like to oh, that's your value, that's my value. Oh, that's the God we believe in, that's the God I believe in. That's the way we're supposed to do relationships, nutrition, sex, everything. Oh, that's what I do. And so we just adopt it. We experience conformity.
Yeah.
Because conformity is adaptive. It's evolutionarily, it ensures.
Safe.
Exactly. So it's like the soul is going though, like, no, but we got the fucking internet now. Like now you can catch a plane. You know, if you're blessed enough to be able to do it, you can drive a car. You can go, you can catch a bus. You can walk. You can look online now and find other people who are witchy.
Yeah.
You can look online and find other people who are like, I don't want that.
Yeah.
And, like I remember when I wanted to start writing about relationships years and years ago, someone said to me that I held in high esteem and do, but just now I can see what they were really doing was just like their own fear of my failure was becoming my fear of my failure through the advice or the reflections they were giving me. But they said, like, why are you not just grateful for what you have? And I was like, oh, fuck, yeah, why am I not? Like, I'm not happy with the relationship I was just in, even though she was great. I don't want the job I have. But I can see now is like, you can still appreciate the things you've experienced in your life and want fucking more.
For sure.
But you know what's fucking monetizable is staying in something, thinking and feeling guilty or not inviting that thing, like if it's a relationship, not inviting the relationship to evolve into what I'm actually feeling called to desire.
Yeah.
Which doesn't mean you have to leave something. Sometimes it does. But it means that there at least needs to be an invitation if that feels aligned. And if they want to meet that invitation, that's up to them.
Yeah.
And if they don't, then you can choose to dissolve that or decide to stay. But like what's monetizable is...
misery.
Exactly. Misery.
Yeah.
It's so easy to sell me something.
Yeah.
When I don't like my life.
No. You're so much more easily manipulated and your mind is because you don't have your clear sovereignty on what you believe and what's true to you and what's definitive in your reality. It's like you can be swayed by anything.
Why do you think that we need, because I know a conversation about a lot of your work has been about rage rituals.
It has been.
Yeah.
It's been a big conversation. Yeah.
Yeah. And I really see the value in rage. And I think for a lot of us, we're terrified of it, but I'm curious why, like, why do you think it's also drawn a lot of attention to you? And where have you seen the value for men and women, but maybe especially for women?
I think it's drawn a lot of attention because it is so unusual. No one sees women rage. People will talk about it. You see all the TikToks, oh, my wife this, or, you know.
Or like joking about stuff.
About her nagging or her losing it or throwing a tantrum or being dramatic or whatever it is. So everyone has this story of like, oh, I experienced that side of my wife in the safety or lack thereof of our own home in the quiet behind closed doors. But I think there's several things about it. One is they're all doing it together. We're doing it together. There's, you know, 30 plus women in each of those rituals raging together as a team. And it is that same thing. It's like, it's you and me versus the issue. And the issue is that women have been abused. We've been suppressed. Like you were talking about, the reason why women want to know is because like we are the subordinate minority, even though like there are more of us in this society. And I was watching something. A man asked a woman, like, what do you know about, why do you talk about masculinity? This was on Justin Baldoni's podcast. Why do you talk about masculinity? What gives you the right? And she's like, because the oppressed always knows as much as they can about the oppressor, knows even more about the oppressor than the oppressor knows about themselves.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's caused a lot of, it's a stir because we are choosing, okay, I want to face off with the part of me that feels unworthy because of social media. I want to face off with the part of me that has been trained to hate my body instead of taught how to love it and right. how to listen to it.
Experience and pleasure. And
in every way, whether yeah. it's like just enjoying the food that I'm eating or like loving what I'm wearing or just being able to touch myself. You know, you see a woman even just doing this. Someone commented on something. They're like, oh, it's so sexual. I'm like, me gently caressing my arms that have nerve endings on them, and I got these cool nails.
Basically, like, a new clit.
But there's so much judgment about women enjoying themselves, enjoying their lives, and so I think that to see women standing up for themselves and fighting back again without an adversary in front of them,
right.
they're not yelling at anyone. They're not hurting anyone. They're not creating anything dramatic or in conflict with another person. They're literally just touching the parts of themselves that never had the opportunity to say no when a boundary was crossed,
right.
or because of everything else that we've been talking about, where we choose self-abandonment. We choose to like stay quiet in the face of a powerful man, whether it's a boss or a partner or our father or a teacher or a preacher, anything. And we don't stand up for ourselves, or we don't do something. We're raging about that moment. Rage is a reactive emotion.
Important, yeah.
And so I think that people have never seen women stand up for themselves in that way, and especially not stand against someone. She's not arguing with anyone. She's just releasing. It is a somatic emotional release, that practice. And it's so powerful. And then I think
it must feel so good.
It feels so good.
Their
We're doing one again.
Their eyes must be so clear.
Oh my yeah. goddess. People's faces change. You see a woman at the beginning of that ritual. It's a 1-hour ritual. And it is part of a 6-day deep healing transformative retreat in a castle out in the woods. It's not like, you know, one of the pages was like, this is a camp in Oregon. I'm like, no, it's not. We're literally in Scotland, but okay. And it's so much about letting the things that you've been carrying and all the moments that you pretended that a red flag was green and all the times where you either weren't strong enough or weren't informed enough or weren't old enough to protect yourself. It's just about releasing the pain of that. And I think that, you know, in our society, nobody's taught to face off with their pain. Oh, deal with this hurt inside of you. Deal with the way that you've been betrayed. And then that maybe the original betrayal, right? Like there's a lot of people with childhood sexual abuse. So an adult betrayed an innocent child. But then because of that, the child then betrays themselves again and again.
Yeah.
And that pattern is anchored into the way that they operate. Mm-hmm. And it's raging against every single moment that they allowed that one horrific incident to inform their behavior for the rest of their lives. And so I think that, I mean, there's a myriad of reasons why it's gone and it's been vastly misunderstood. And even, you know, conscious men have been sharing it and making fun of it. And men that I would have thought would be really respectful of it have just played into the whole clickbait thing. And that's been disappointing, but I stand by it so wholeheartedly because I watch what happens. And if we're, you know, if our body is at 100%, but 20% of that is filled with pain that we've never felt, or like you were saying earlier, you know, the things that we've rejected or refused or ignored or shut down, or, you know, okay, lock that away, put that in the deepest, darkest dungeon inside of my psyche. You know, all of these, Gabor Mate, Basil van der Kork, the body does keep the score.
Yeah.
It's in there. That's what's causing these autoimmune conditions, which women are having at a rate we've never seen before, because we're ignoring ourselves and because we're refusing to stand up for who we are. And so when I see women and the collective field, there will be someone standing who is like, for the first time, going back into a traumatic memory of abuse, and maybe, you know, maybe she's curled up on the ground, or maybe she's screaming and she's crying, and someone else will stand right, I'm like getting chills just thinking about it, will stand right beside her and be like, no, stay away from her. And they will become the warrior that protects her. And then the woman who's in her little girl can feel someone actually standing up for her and protecting her and showing up for her in a way that no one ever did. The field is so emergent and so collective. But then the freedom, like the, you see, okay, if that 20% of my body's power, of my energy was taken up by keeping this under lock and key for 30 years, what can I do with that 20% now?
Everything's fucking possible.
I can make miracles. I can fill it with pleasure, which that's why, you know, 2 days later, we do a beautiful pleasure ritual in, underneath the canopy of the forest and refill and refuel ourselves with pleasure and with sensual delight and with self-love. And again, that's not something that we're taught about. So we have to relearn, we have to retrain ourselves. And I love the rage ritual. And it's so funny, like that was my biggest issue in my partnership. I was angry. I was frustrated. I was like, why aren't you dealing with your shit? You know? And that's my responsibility for not figuring out a better way into a wounded boy's psyche.
Yeah.
And that's on me. And then of course, like once I just couldn't do it anymore and was like, this is not aligned for me. I gotta go. That's when like the rage rituals popped off. And all of a sudden this thing that has been such an important part of my life, both in terms of like learning what not to do and learning what's important for me to share and offer with women. It's, of course, it's like the thing that now I'm becoming this, you know, kind of face of, whether that's on the internet in a way that's being made fun of, or someone who does truly believe in the somatic and the healing value of this practice. But what I've seen from women, and women always come back to my retreats, and usually they say, I needed another rage ritual. I needed to do it again. I needed to go deeper because we're going to hit one layer. And you'll find with all of us, with men, with women, usually men have access to anger, and underneath what they're protecting is sadness.
Yeah.
And usually women have access to sadness, and what they're protecting underneath is rage.
Yeah.
And then some of us have numbness at the top that's trying to protect us from feeling any of those things because we're afraid of what will happen. We'll be rejected. We'll be abandoned if we feel these things. And I just feel so honored that that the goddess chose me to do this work, because I really love the metaphor of a volcano. You know, the places we love to go, Hawaii and the Philippines and New Zealand, these gorgeous paradise islands, they came from volcanoes. And our anger is a volcanic eruption. If we do not direct it appropriately or create a safe container, which is why I lead rage rituals, if we just let it erupt, it can cause a lot of destruction.
Right.
We can hurt people, we can hurt ourselves. And again, going back to those elements, right? It's liquid fire. It's like a transformative emotion, but it's also made of the earth. It is our bodies, and it is our relationships. It's in response to something that's happened in our material reality. But after the volcano erupts and the cool winds blow and the waters splash and flow on the lava fields and the fires cool down and, you know, a bird flies by and drops a seed that then, again, just like that garden, gets fertilized and tended to with the right combination or amalgamation of our awareness and our emotional regulation and how we act and how we respond and how we treat ourselves and others. That volcanic eruption becomes paradise. It becomes the kind of place where we all want to be and we all want to hang out. And so that to me is my intention with the rage rituals, is like, let's, if we need to be volcanoes, if there is something building up so deeply within us, and it is power, it's actually power. It can feel disempowering when we shut it down and when we say, no, you're not safe and you are not welcome here. But it's power. And so when give ourselves choice, permission to choose, I'm gonna say the things that I've never said. I'm gonna release the things that I've been shutting down my whole life. We open ourselves to become that paradise. Mm. And that's what I witness every single day when I lead rage rituals, because I watch women free themselves from the chains that have held them back that no one else has the key to.
Yeah, so true. And it's so beautiful to know that when you access the extreme of rage, then now you can dance in the beauty of clean anger. Like you said, rage, when directed at something and uncontained, it could be extremely destructive, yeah. which, of course, you know, we've alluded to in all the ways that could show up relationally. When I did a psychotherapy training, one of the parts of it, I'd done this a few times, but I was processing something and I had to get up. But to get up, everyone in the group was holding me down. So I had to find like a level of power and to get up despite the resistance. And the point of the resistance was so that, and of course, like letting me get up, but like not letting me.
Yeah.
So like allowing me to experience what I needed to access. And I had no idea how much it would release then things like grief, you know, as you were saying. And it's like anger is Sad's bodyguard, you know, like this idea of, you know, Hilary Jacobs Hendel is a great teacher. She's a psychotherapist. And she talks about how like when one of or more of our core emotions are not able to be expressed, what happens is it shows up as anxiety or shame. Mm. And those are inhibitory emotions. So we experience those so that because we can't experience that. But when we have a bunch of them at the same time too, like anger, rage, disgust, that they collapse on each other and show up as anxiety. So I think of like all the ways that we are so anxious because we're not self-expressed. And when you were talking about like, how do you access the boy to come forward? And I think like when we're still, and I think that's such an important question because the question I get so much is about the female's experience of the male.
Yeah.
And like, how do I get this man to not be defensive, to like learn? I want us to be better. And I think it's what you were saying is like, it's so interesting if we keep coming from this like punitive, you're broken, why won't you get fixed? And we go instead to, I see that the way I'm going about this is not working. Which means the way I'm doing it is not, you're not hearing it. And so this is what I need for our relationship to move forward.
Yeah.
And if not, okay. And if yes, awesome.
Yeah.
And here's what that looks like.
Yeah.
And how does that feel for you? But we're not taught to do that. And I know for me, I really had to confront the gigantic fear that I'd let my partner down.
Yeah.
And if I let her down, then I'm not valuable. So there was like this importance that at the same time of me receiving the feedback from, I received lots of feedback from lots of women in my life. I just wasn't ready to hear it.
Yeah.
But it always planted a seed.
That's why it creates defense, right?
Yeah, like I can think of statements said to me that I was like, eh. And then years later, like, whoa, that was profound, which I think really led me on the path to finally find like the pieces only went together because of that piece. That's why I always say to people, like, deliver the feedback because you never know. You might not be the person who wakes them up, but you might be the person who started it.
Yeah.
And so it's so valuable because I think it's about actually hearing yourself say it rather than their response to what you say.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so the rage ritual is, it's primal in a way that it's so important.
Yeah.
Like the other day I was frustrated about something, so I pulled my car over and I just yelled in my car.
Yeah.
To a place of exasperation. I almost lost my voice for like 3 days.
Nice. Car raging is a really good safe space to do it. Pulled over.
Yeah, I loved it. Yeah. I was like, because I always feel clear after.
Yeah.
The somatic experience of, I would imagine, especially for women, but this would be true for like nice guys too, but like especially for women where it's like they might never have touched the edge of fuck it. I will fucking destroy this stick, you know, but
literally,
or like I will destroy if you fuck with, and that knowing you can go there is actually what makes the I can't do a date on Friday or this isn't aligned.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, really honoring what is true, what is aligned, because, you know, you just said it, we call it the nice guys. And then for women, often it's like people pleasing, right?
Yeah.
All of that is a trauma response.
Yes.
All of that is if I stand up for myself, if I say what's true for me, I will be rejected. I will be abandoned. And yeah, it's so beautiful to see those shifts happen and to understand that when we're in these conversations with others, with our partners, when men get defensive, you're talking to like a 5, 6, 7, 8 year old boy. You're not talking to your 30 or 40 year old partner. You're talking to the wound that occurred from their mother, whatever it is, or whoever caused it in them during that time. And that's also the version of us that needs the freedom to feel like, oh, I can destroy something. I can stand up for myself. And tears, you know, men not crying tears are the number one way that our body releases the stress hormone cortisol. It's like, yeah, you can get a good workout in. I love hitting the gym. I love a good workout. Release your endorphins. Let's fucking go. And for cortisol to exit your body, for the chemical to leave, tears are its strongest release point. And how many of us are, especially men, you know, crying regularly and giving themselves that permission? Not very many. And so these safe spaces for deep emotions are, I think, one of the major keys to this new evolution of our society.
Totally agree. Like, what's possible for all of us instead of like, I need you to change. It's like, I'm going to fucking change. And then the embodiment I have, the boundary I set is actually the invitation for you to become an adult, because I became an adult. I'm stopped chasing. And, you know, I always think like you never have to force what's aligned. It will always meet you in mutuality. And that's like, it's relational. It's generative.
Yeah.
And it's like, what are we generating? Because all relationships are generative. So it's like, well, what are we creating through the combination? Like, you and I got together, we got some microphones, and we've created something, which I'm grateful for. And I'm like, all of us are doing that all the time. So it's like, what are we creating? More love? Or are we creating more fear? And Ram Dass, obviously I love, said, I hope that I live with the integrity that the truths that live within me are the same as the truths that live outside of me. Mm. And when those are not aligned, I send a message of love and fear. And I always think for me, like, that felt like the perfect definition of integrity. Mm. It's like, is there a difference between what I know to be true within me and what I live? And now that I have a son, it's like a whole different level of responsibility, which is like, what did I tell him versus who was I?
Yeah.
Because I could say all the cool shit in the world. How am I showing up? But he's like, what did dad do when integrity was on the line, when values were on the line? And I'm like, fuck that. Yeah, I showed up because I can't tell you to do that. How did I treat his mother? You know, like, what a model that is. You know, and I think about that, how important that is. I don't take that responsibility lightly. And obviously you don't take any of these responsibilities lightly.
No.
And Mia, that's the magic.
Yeah. And the piece that you said earlier about all of our emotions stacking on and creating shame, like, shame is the most insidious wound in our society, because that is how it's being crafted. It's not just, oh, I did something wrong. Now it's my feelings are wrong. My words are wrong. What I've done is wrong. Oh, I'm not showing up for my partner. And you said, that's men's biggest fear. I'm going to let them down. But then by the choice of not doing the thing that they're asking you to do, you're letting them down every single day. And so the shame is just getting perpetuated and then drives these behaviors. Like, that's something that I've been really learning and witnessing, is like how shame drives behavior in the masculine, where you can think that you know somebody, and then all of a sudden the things that they're doing as a result of their shame are so completely out of character. And that is what you just said about your son. It's like, how do we bring the parts of ourselves that respond and are informed by shame into the parts of ourselves that we love and that we feel confident in and we're excited by? And how can we use that love and that cheerleading and that support to work with our shame and say, hey, you're safe here and you're held here, and I can face off with you, and I can cry the tears that you need to cry. And that energy, where if women stop shaming men for not knowing how to do the thing, and men stop feeling shame for not knowing how to do the thing or to face off with it, and we can literally come together and acknowledge shame exists, and society has programmed us not to feel or do any of this in a way that is collaborative, we will rewrite relational dynamics for our
family
future in one generation. But we just have to actually do it. And it takes so much fucking courage. It takes so much courage to do it. And I just feel so excited. You know, I learned so much from going through an uncoupling process yeah. about what's important to me and what matters to me and what roles I've played and what is being asked of me, what it means to be a wife and a partner. And I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful for that challenge, even though I learned more from misalignment than I did from alignment.
Always, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
One's fucking peaceful. The other one, not so much.
Not so much. Yeah.
Yeah. When my wife and I broke up when we were dating, I learned so much from that. Mm. And now I knew already the value of my relationships ending. I mean, I'd already been working in this space for a long time, and I'd really cultivated so much of the value from every loss, every betrayal. But with that was the first time I did it sober, like was in the actual process of ending sober. And I was like, holy, there's so much grief here. There's so much that I've escaped that I'm like, there's so much potency that actually is trying to change me.
Yeah.
And if I let it, I'll never be the same again in the most beautiful ways. That's why when someone's like, I'm going through a breakup, I'm like, all right, let's fucking go.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Right. Like, let's fucking go. Cause like you think it's the end. It is the beginning of everything. Like this can be the moment that your life was never the same in the best way. You think it's never the same in the worst way. If you actually are ready, it's the best way.
Yeah.
And like it's hard to see heartbreak as being in service. You know, I think of like when someone says I'm heartbroken, I'm like, no, if you're suffering and you're hurting, that means your heart's open.
Yeah.
And it's not broken. It's working. It's just like, how do you develop skills and abilities to preserve and protect who you open it to?
Yeah.
Like you can't just open your heart to everybody. You know, I always think of the archetype of like there's the child and the warrior. And those two exist within us. And I would say avoidant people are more warrior and anxious people are more child. And you could put that construct with like empath, narcissist, you know, like all of the different archetypal ways of explaining similar dynamics. But I'm like, if you do not have access, if you're all warrior, there's no openness. If you're all child, there's too much trust.
Yeah.
You trust people that you shouldn't trust. Like you said, like the childhood patterns get repeated. So we either become too open or too closed. And it's like, well, we actually need both of these. It's not. And it's amazing how that archetype goes to like left or right or, you know, pro or anti.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, no, it's about nuance. It's about diverse thought, diverse field, you know, that we're so complex.
I know.
And grief and rage, such potent and what we might consider dark.
Yeah.
But they're not. Like they're actually what emerges. And there's a saying from Jungian
psychology.
Yeah, I just can't remember if it was Jung who said it, but that we develop a different vision, a vision to see in the dark, a different set of eyes. And I'm like, that's intuition.
Yeah. And part of it is like reading all the language of the universe. I went and saw the bats last night. We're here in Austin. You know, the bats go out at night from the bridge. And
oh, yeah, I've heard of this. I haven't seen it.
It's one of the largest natural phenomenons in an urban environment. So I work a lot with owls. Obviously God made these feathers, but I made the earring and from an owl that I found. And owls are about seeing through the darkness, right? They can see crystal clear through the night in the shadow. And bats actually don't see, but they hear. It's like listening in the darkness. What is the information that is being offered to us from the heartbreak, from the challenge? And this has been the best. This initiation of uncoupling from a relationship that was so sweet in so many ways and also still not right for me, where like I was not showing up as the version of myself that my inner child needs me to be, like the fucking warrior that she needs from me. And it is such a blessing. Where else, how else could I have seen all of the microscopic ways that the negative patterns that maybe I thought I dealt with, or like, oh, I've faced off with these things, or oh, look, because I've built this successful business, I of course I feel worthy. Like I'm worthy of love and magic and all of the things. And I got to see all the little microscopic ways where I hadn't completed a pattern, where there is still so much work to do. And so I'm like in the congratulations on the breakup for people. And I think that men do tend to numb and rebound quickly and not take the sacred pause. And I'm like, good luck with those same old patterns. They're going to be enjoyable for you for as many years as you choose to keep them. But I am witnessing how profoundly every single day the choice is, okay, do I want to operate the way that I was before? Do I want to relate to men or my inner masculine? Like, that's the biggest piece that for me in calling in partnership and in going through breakup. It's like, if you want a masculine partner, how does your masculine side show up? Are you providing for yourself? Are you direct and disciplined on your purpose and on your devotion to yourself, to your spiritual practice? How are you creating safety for yourself, for your inner child? How are you being the warrior for your inner queen or your inner goddess? And that work has been so illuminating and so empowering. And yeah. I feel like someone said to me that a heart doesn't break. A heart is a waterfall. Mm. Your heart is coursing and pouring out love in every moment. It can't break, but you can like dam it up. You can stop it. And then everything down beneath it, that riparian zone of your life and your love and your path can dry up or can, you know, be harmed in some way. And if you can see your heart as a waterfall, if you can stay open, even in the moments where it feels broken, and instead just look at, okay, what was my invitation? What choice did I make? What was aligned? What wasn't? How is my body responding? Can I commit to listening now? Can I devote myself to worthiness? And we were joking about it before we started the recording, but if I settled for crumbs of love, if that was my pattern, how can I not just like give myself the whole loaf, but the whole bakery? What does it mean for me to create love in every area of my life that feeds me and nourishes me and keeps me safe? Because when I can do that for myself, then automatically, by the nature of the way the universe works, I will be able to attract the kind of partner who can meet me and match me in that. And so I believe that, yeah, heartbreak and breakups are just one of the greatest teachers if you actually are willing to look at your role in why it didn't work.
Beautiful. Amen to that. Responsibility for the win.
Yeah.
Mia Magic.
Yes.
Where can people find more of you?
Everything. MIAMAGIK. Mia Magic. Website, Instagram, YouTube, all the social medias. Doing retreats and books and castles and all kinds of fun things. And lots of magic coming up for witch season. And it's all
season.
Yeah, exactly. So
fall's
witch season. Like October. Yeah. Everyone can be a witch in
Halloween.
October. You know, exactly.
Sexy witches.
Exactly. Yeah. So just Mia Magic, MIAMAGIK.
Perfect. We'll put all the links in the show notes. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate it.